Chapter 2 Prophet. Maqua stood on a rock in the middle of a swamp and looked all around at the abundant life. He could see fish swimming in the water around the rock, and insects buzzing about. As he looked up, he saw the biggest trees he'd ever seen, towering higher than any Barumish Futh tree. A chill crept over him, and he looked up to see something huge. It was a mass of great, dark, floating objects. He saw fire fall all around him, the trees ablaze, the water around the rock also burning as flames licked up over its surface to try to consume him. He opened his mouth to scream for help, but when he drew breath to do it, the choking smoke took him. With a start, he awoke. Sunlight was bright and warm on him, and the sky above him was filled with clouds that drifted by at a languid pace, like fluffy white futh seeds, all puffy and soft as they rode the wind. He drew in a deep, thankful breath, and then blinked and wondered where he was. The cart hit a rock and jostled, reminding him of his choice. He sat up and turned to see Saruth staring into the distance.
"Saruth?"
There was no reply. Maqua looked around at the countryside. Gone were the scent of sea air and the masts of ships in the harbor. Gone were the houses stacked three high that clumped together and filled the city with narrow streets. Gone was Baruma City. Maqua looked back along the rising path, saw a forest, and beyond it his hometown. Past that he saw glittering faraway waters filled with distant ships. He realized that they were high in the hills now, and it had been hours since daybreak. Farmlands and fields shaped the landscape in almost every direction he could see. Groves of trees and rows of grain gave the land a fertile appearance. This, he thought, had to be why people said Barumith fed the world. The bounty was so great out here that Maqua had to wonder how he'd ever gone hungry, and he rubbed his ears as he considered what had to happen for that to take place. It made his ears tip back and his tail twitch. He thought to himself, what about the lost kids? What about the poor widows? With so much out here, how could so many have so little? He looked up into the sky and frowned, not liking the conclusions he was coming to, as none boded well. Saruth took a deep breath and seemed to breathe out the weight of the world as he looked over his shoulder.
Oh, you're awake. I apologize for not paying proper attention. I was concentrating on a dream I've been having.
Maqua perked his ears, looked over, and lifted a brow as his dappled brown face showed curiosity. A change of subject was welcome.
Saruth, will you tell me about your dream?
Saruth tilted his head.
I'll tell you if you don't mind sad dreams.
Maqua nodded and made a cautious climb into the front of the cart to sit by Saruth. In a deeper storytelling voice, Saruth said,
Within a time in the near future, a great darkness will come from the nation of Lathmos. It will walk through the skies, over the oceans and lands, to seek out the great cities of Nam. When it comes, the armies and ships of the great nations will lift flags of war in vain. The great darkness in the sky will rain fire down onto the cities and forests, burning most of them to ashes. That is my dream that I've been concentrating on.
Maqua's golden eyes grew wide.
That's a terrible dream. I saw it too. The big sky things came and dropped fire to burn the forest.
Saruth leaned back and lifted a brow.
When did you see this?
Maqua licked his nose and one ear tipped back while the other remained perked.
Just now, when I was sleeping. I was on a rock, and the forest, the water, everything was burning.
Saruth put a finger to his chin, and consideration was apparent in his blue eyes as he looked into the sky above, and then looked back to Maqua.
Did your mother teach you songs?
Maqua blinked.
Songs?
Saruth nodded and waved his hands.
Special songs. Songs that help you do things.
Maqua shook his head.
I don't know many songs, Saruth.
Saruth tucked his hands into the sleeves of his expansive blue robe.
You will.
Maqua looked around, watching the countryside roll by.
Saruth?
The man's ears perked.
Yes.
Is it real?
The warm blue eyes of the man met his.
It could be. Not all dreams are real, and some are just partly real. Some are only true if we make them so and work on them becoming true. Others become true unless we work hard to deny them. I'm working to find a way to keep this one from being a future reality.
Makwa nodded and watched the fruit bushes go by. He looked up at Saruth.
Why did you help me?
Saruth smiled in a way that seemed to warm Makwa's center.
Because whenever we help those in need, Jehovah the Creator smiles. I have nothing to lose in taking your company, and everything to gain in being your friend.
Makwa snorted and thought for a moment.
People aren't like that, are they?
Saruth laughed. The sound was pure, like a ship's bell over still waters.
Makwa, where I'm from, I believe most people are like that. Someday you can go there if you like, and I'll show you.
Makwa thought a bit more and decided that he'd very much like to go to a place where most people were like Saruth.
I'd like that, I think.
He'd never met anyone who would help out someone they'd never met before. It was as if Saruth had stepped from another world into this one. His strange ways were not logical according to things Makwa had learned in his short life.
Are you hungry, Makwa?
Makwa nodded and rubbed his belly.
Yeah.
Saruth handed him a piece of spice cake. He held it in his hands and looked at it for a moment. He licked his lips, went to take the first bite, and stopped. Tears came to his eyes as memories of his mother flooded him. Saruth touched his shoulder.
You don't have to eat it if you don't want to, Makwa. I know you're hurting. I can see it. If you need to talk about it, I'll listen to everything you have to say, and I won't judge you.
Makwa sniffled and took a slow bite. He was silent as he relished the taste for a moment.
Mom made these for me. They're my favorite. She loved me a lot. We never had help. She did everything she could, so I was happy. She died, though.
He closed his eyes.
I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Saruth nodded and squeezed Makwa's shoulder.
When you're ready, you can tell me more.
He looked at the horizon.
Makwa, if you could do anything in the world, anything at all, what would you do?
Makwa was quick to open his eyes and lay his ears back with a flick of his tail. There was a pause before he spoke.
Anything I want?
Anything.
Makwa's eyes grew wide as he thought about how very big anything was. Honesty didn't cost him much at the moment.
I don't know, Saruth. I've never been asked something so big before. It might take me a long time to answer.
Saruth grinned at him.
For some, it takes a lifetime to answer that question. Don't hurt your brain thinking too fast on it, but don't stop thinking about it either, because if you do, life becomes rather pointless. Everyone has something they want to do deep inside them. But not everyone knows it. Sometimes the bigger the thing they want to do, the longer it takes to figure it out.
Makwa nodded.
I'll tell you if I figure it out, Saruth.
His ears perked as a thought came into his mind like a fish jumping into a dory.
How long until we get to a town?
Saruth shrugged.
A day, I suppose. Along roads like this, there's often a place to stop every day's worth of travel, an inn at least, if not a city.
Makwa nodded again and looked back over his shoulder. Baruma's city and the ocean were gone behind the hills. Night came with a creeping chill that one could brush off only to have it return. Saruth was prepared with blankets, and Makwa purred to himself as he wrapped up in thick footh blossom cloth. He perked his ears at the night sounds as the rolling prairie's array of nocturnal creatures came forth from their burrows. The Cathberry pulling the cart slowed a bit. It sniffed the air but kept going. Saruth pointed through the darkness at a distant light.
That's our next stop.
Makwa nodded.
How long will we stay?
Until around daybreak, I believe.
Soon the light grew into a recognizable town. A few bright lamps and fires were seen along the road as the two entered. Leading the cart to an inn with its sign showing a bed, meal plate, and ale mug, Saruth hopped down from it and knocked at the door. The innkeeper emerged in a moment and then called a stable boy to help them with their cart and Cathberry.
Makwa, I want you to go help with the Cathberry.
Makwa looked at Saruth, narrowed his eyes, and scrunched his nose. Saruth lifted a brow. With a huff, Makwa nodded and wandered off after the other boy.
Thank you, Makwa.
He ignored the smile as he went, tail lashing behind him. Why should he do all this? As Makwa stepped into the hay-strewn room, he saw the other boy. The stranger was similar to him in both fur pattern and age, was dressed in blue overalls, had a red bandana around his neck, and a stalk of sweetgrass between his teeth. He hummed as he worked, and his hands made steady, determined movements in the task of liberating the Cathbury from the cart. Michael watched for a moment that came and went, and thought that maybe he wouldn't have to do anything at all. Even still, he thought about the fact that he was fed and his ears laid back. "So what do I do to help?" The stable boy looked up at him. An expression that was wary made a slow transformation into one that was stoic.
"Well, first you can tell me your name so I know what to call you. I'm Jethk. You know anything about Cathberries?"
"Makwa," he shrugged. "They're big. They don't bite people unless they're poked at. This one seems pretty friendly." He resisted the urge to touch the creature.
Jethk smirked. "Anything else?"
Makwa's ears turned outward.
"Nope."
Jethk sighed, waved him closer, and pointed to the harness.
"That's fine. Watch me unharness him. It's not really that hard, but you need to know this if you're going to work around Cathberries."
Makwa watched as Jethk loosened buckles and unbuttoned straps that connected one part of the harness to the other.
"Why is that thing so complicated? Wouldn't a plain old rope around the middle be easier?"
Jethk tilted his head and offered Makwa a curious look.
"Well, depends on for who you mean. Cathberries aren't like some of the rarer livestock. They're tougher, eat less, work more, and are stronger than just about anything else we use for the jobs they do. But their scaled hide needs a harness like this, or they'll get sore from it. It has to fit like your hand in a glove."
He pointed as he continued to explain.
"It goes over these shoulder ridges, and this one at the top of the tail over the hip. This won't make 'em sore and sick like wraps on the middle will when a load is on 'em."
Makwa blinked.
"You know a lot about this, don't you?"
"Mm-hmm.
My dad put me to work doing this when I was 8 winters old.
Jethk lifted the front of the harness that had a ring around the animal's neck and handed it to Makwa. He pointed to 2 padded areas that seemed to rest down against the top and front of the Cathbury's shoulders.
"This part carries the load transferred from this other part along these straps. As you can see from the unbuckling, it does go around under his front legs, but the strap isn't where the pressure is. It's against these shoulder pads."
He pointed to the side of a stall as he went about inspecting the back portion of the harness, his hand on the animal's hip.
"Lay that over the rail there."
Makwa licked his nose and set the front of the harness down. He moved closer, ears perking.
"Now what?" "Help me lift this. Go around him and keep a hand on him all the way around so he knows you're there and doesn't thump you. Step over the poles and let me know when you're ready to lift."
Jethk gripped one side of the large half-circle that was the second part of the harness. Michael moved into position and nodded as he got a good grip.
"Okay."
Jethk nodded, and both of them lifted on their sides. The animal seemed happy to be free of the harness and stepped forward. Jethk unfolded a pole down from beneath the other that attached to the cart and set its base on the ground. Makwa did the same and blinked.
"Okay, someone thought that through."
Jethk grinned.
"Perfect. Time for a sit."
He nodded to a hay bale. Makwa sat down on it and Jethk sat beside him. Jethk grabbed a water skin from a post, took a drink, and then held it out to Makwa.
"He's a fine one. What's his name?"
Makwa took the skin, had a long, satisfying guzzle, and handed it back.
"I never thought about it. I don't know. Does he need one?"
Jethk kicked his feet while he looked at the olive-green lizard beast.
"Everyone needs a name. How about you call him Sebastian, like the name of the path that goes to Baruma City?"
"Sebastian is..." Makwa stopped to think about it.
"A good name. All right, I'll call him that. Who is the path named for?"
Jethk shrugged. "Some explorer from a long time ago. Come on, and let's take care of him." Makwa hopped up and walked over to the animal, who seemed content to remain in the stable even when loose. He ran his hand over the warm hide, felt the scales give just enough to seem soft, and made sure to keep that touch on the Cathbury while moving around him. Sebastian lowed and turned his big head, rubbing it against Makwa's shoulder with a surprising gentleness. He gave a coo as he licked Makwa on the cheek.
"Ack!"
Makwa brushed his face and backed up. Sebastian lowed again.
"Relax, Makwa. He's just telling you he likes you. He's thanking you. They like when you rub on 'em."
Makwa wrinkled his nose and laid his ears back.
"Can't he be less sloppy about it?"
Jethk laughed.
"That's the only way he knows, you know. It isn't like he has hands to clap for you or rub your ears."
He pointed.
"Get that bucket and go to the well out back. You know how to get water from one, right? Fill this trough.
Makwa gave him a grin, and his eyes narrowed.
I know how to breathe, too.
Jeth held up both hands.
Kinktail, I was just checking, he grinned. Get to it.
Makwa nodded and went to draw water again and again, watching the level in the trough rise a little each time. When he returned with the final bucket, he found Jeth pouring some grain into a long, flat feeding pan.
Just set that one down beside him. He'll get to it, and once he does, he'll go to the trough from there.
Makwa did so, watching as Sebastian lifted his head to look at the water for a moment and sniff it before he went back to eating.
Isn't he thirsty?
No. They can go for a week without water, even longer without food. He has priorities. Right now he's set on food. When he does get to it, we might be refilling the trough.
Makwa looked at Sebastian with wide eyes.
That's pretty long.
Yep. Jeth cut a small piece of fruit and tossed the slices into the pan.
A little of this and they'll love you forever. Catberries adore fruit.
Sebastian blinked, sniffed around the pan, and reached with his spoon-shaped tongue to scoop some of the slices of fruit into his mouth. After chewing on them, he looked up at Jeth and rubbed his head against the boy's chest as if to prove his point. After they quartered Sebastian for the night, they talked about games they had played and stories they had heard. Jeth was amazed when Makwa told him about the ocean because he'd never seen it.
Like a pond?
Jeth asked.
Like 1,000 ponds at once and alive, Makwa answered.
Jeth knew about stuff that Makwa didn't, like travelers from Regenta. They talked for an hour or so before Saruth and the innkeeper came to fetch them and take them in for the night.
Saruth handed him a bowl of grain porridge with nuts and a slice of fruit as they sat down at the little table in their room. Dinner for the good worker.
Makwa took it and sat, staring at it.
Saruth?
The man paused in his eating and looked over.
I had never been outside the city until today. I saw fields of food. There was so much food that I see why people say what they do about Barumith.
He looked at his own food, nose twitching as he took in the scent. Grains, nuts, fruit. Everything he could need was right there.
You talk about God. Why would God let there be so much food and then allow for people to go hungry? Why doesn't God do something?
Saruth put his spoon into his bowl and perked his ears, thought in his ice-blue eyes. He took a deep breath and then said,
Makwa, let me ask you a question.
He looked over at Saruth, ears laying back.
Had he asked something wrong? Okay.
When you have more food than you need, what do you do?
Makwa blinked at that and felt his ears heat. The question was uncomfortable, to say the least, and kinda not fair. That hadn't happened very often to him. He scrunched his nose as he thought about it and chose honesty.
I would hide it for later.
Why?
Saruth lifted a brow. Was Saruth just dense? Makwa snorted. There had to be more to it than that.
Because then, later, when I was hungry again, I could eat it then. That's just basic sense.
He swallowed, hoping the man wouldn't be mad over the last bit. Saruth narrowed his eyes.
That's what? I asked why.
Makwa stared at him.
They're the same thing, then.
Saruth shook his head.
Not precisely, no. They're not the same. What are the actions you're doing, and why are the reasons you're doing those actions? Let me ask again, why would you hide the food?
Maybe Saruth was just a foreign idiot. Makwa growled in his throat and rolled his eyes.
This is stupid. You save food for later because you might be hungry later. It's as simple as that.
Why?
Saruth's tone was obnoxious in its level of patience. Makwa stood up and then realized he didn't really have anywhere to go or anything to do, so with a growl he sat back down. He took a bite of his food, munching it, swallowing after, and sighed. It was good. It was good enough to notice, anyway. And he looked at it.
This is good.
This is a good inn. That's not what we're discussing, though.
Makwa's ears pinned back and he looked up at Saruth.
I don't know.
Sure you do, Saruth smirked. You're a smart one. Just stop and think. Why would anyone hoard anything?
Makwa licked his nose.
Because... He tilted his head and looked at the man. They might need it later. Could this be any simpler?
Why would they need it later?
Makwa pushed his bowl up and bonked his head on the table, nose hanging just beyond the edge.
Because, you big white footh seed, They might need whatever it is later, and if they don't have it, they'll have problems, like going without food, or clothing, or whatever it is they needed in the first place. They're afraid they won't have what they need.
Saruth was silent. Makwa lifted his head to see the man pointing at him with his spoon.
And there you are. The reason you'd hoard food is that you yourself are worried that you might go without later. You could give it to someone else, share so that they don't go hungry now, but in the moment of choice you choose you over them, worrying over your own future, and you let them go hungry now so that you won't later.
Makwa stared and then growled, ears back.
That's not true. I was poor. I had to steal to eat. And when I did, I almost never had enough. And even when I did get more than I needed, I kept it because I knew I would need it later. You're saying that I'm greedy by not sharing what I have with others, but that's not fair, because I didn't know when the next meal would be. He looked away from the man. You're rich, so you don't understand anything about that, but I'm not.
Saruth sat there and then took a bite of his food, ears perked. Makwa sat silent, and his eyes made the slow trek over to take in the eating man. Saruth chewed his food, his eyes on the table, and a tiny sad smile on his face.
Aren't you going to say anything?
Makwa growled the words. Those eyes came up, intense as ice in the sun.
Did you starve?
What?
Saruth took another bite and pointed with his spoon.
Eat. Your porridge will get cold.
He took a bite of the long green fruit they had, chewed, swallowed, and sighed in contentment.
Did you starve?
No.
Makwa crossed his arms, snorted, and reached for his bowl, taking the spoon and having a bite.
You're not making any sense. You know I didn't starve. Here I am.
Exactly.
Saruth took another bite, chewed slowly with a crunch of the nuts in it, and swallowed before looking back to Makwa.
You didn't starve. You were worried about it. You stole to keep it from happening. You might argue that not sharing your food with others when you had it is partially responsible for keeping you alive.
Saruth paused, lifting a brow.
It was. I didn't go hungry because I'm smart.
Makwa tossed his spoon in the bowl, grabbed the long green fruit, and bit into it. It was sweet, and he crossed his arms, letting it hang from his muzzle as he glared up at Saruth.
Can you prove that?
What?
Makwa grabbed the fruit before it fell from his mouth.
Can you
I know what you said!
Makwa pointed with his fruit.
But it's obvious I'm right, so why do I need to prove anything? I'm still alive because I was a good thief, and because I was smart and quick and thought ahead. I took care of myself.
Saruth offered a patient look that was vexing to the core, and the man's ice-blue eyes showed not a worry in the world for an apparent failure to convince.
Oh, well then,
he made a moving along gesture with his spoon.
I guess you have your answers.
Makwa went to ask the man what he was on about, but he bit his lip and kept his mouth shut as his ears burned. He was pretty sure that Saruth was enjoying this and was not going to take the bait. There they sat, watching one another, both eating. It finally became too much.
Okay!
Makwa put his spoon down and spread his hands out, palms up.
How does this have anything to do with my question in the first place? How does anything you said have anything to do with God, if there is a God, letting people go hungry or get hurt? How does anything you said have anything to do with God not doing anything?
Saruth frowned a little and put his spoon down.
Makwa, that's a very large set of questions for one so young, and just giving you the answers would be a lack of service to you. But I will if you promise me you'll think about it. Part of the trouble this world has is that, as a whole, people don't bother to think about such important things like that. The cost of abdicating such individual consideration is the levy of an exceptionally high price the collective is forced to endure.
What?
Makwa scrunched his nose, ears still back.
Because each person doesn't want to think, all people pay the price.
Makwa looked at the man, emotions moving in every direction inside him. It was clear this white stranger had no malice in him, and if nothing else could, that held Makwa in his seat. He took a deep breath.
Okay, just help me?
Saruth nodded.
God provides. He does so for the animals, and he does so for us. Even when we don't see it or don't choose to acknowledge it, God provides. Those times when you got away with your stealing, God provided for you. He also provided for those you stole from so that they would make it too. All those times you didn't share, God provided for those you wouldn't share with in some other way.
Makwa scowled.
What about the people who actually do starve, Saruth?
Saruth pointed with his spoon. Most of those choose not to accept what's provided for them, or are actually hurt by something else, Makwa. Let me ask you, how many people did you personally know who starved?
Makwa rolled his eyes and then blinked.
He squinted and crossed his arms. Saruth continued to eat and then paused. I'll wager that you knew very few, and of those who did starve, most of them were taken by disease or accident or running with guards or prison.
That much was true. Makwa laid his ears back and thought about how he'd ended up in jail once and made it out thanks to help from a weirdo.
But they still get hurt by people.
Yes. Saruth munched another bite and then pointed with his spoon. People do all sorts of terrible things to others, either out of malice or fear. They hoard food for fear that they might not have enough. They hurt others for fear they themselves might be hurt. They disempower others for fear that their own power might be threatened. The truth is, as you saw on the road, there's more than enough, and as you see when truly considering it, the issue with that getting to those in need isn't any fault of God, but a fault of our own.
Makwa stared at him. But...
Saruth lifted a brow.
Makwa threw his hands in the air.
But why doesn't God do anything?
Saruth eyed the food bowl in front of Makwa.
Doesn't he?
Makwa's eyes widened as he looked from the man to the food. He tried to say something, tried to make words make sense, but couldn't speak as it all came together in his head like a big wave and crashed down all around his awareness. His voice was very small as he spoke.
You can't prove that.
Saruth smiled. It was infuriating.
What?
Saruth shrugged.
God also did something else.
Makwa glared in silence.
The world can be a harsh place, and people can be terrible monsters. That said, we can choose not to be. The crux of the matter is what we do with our lives, our time, our hearts. He took a bite of his fruit, finishing it. God did something when he created you, and put in your heart the anger kindled there against injustice. You've known hunger. You've known pain. You care about others and don't want that to happen to them, and therefore...
He reached to gently place a finger pad against Makwa's nose.
You, he waved his other hand in an expansive gesture, and we all are God's answer to all these things. He did do something. He made us. He made you.
Makwa was tempted to bite the man's finger, but as the desire came, it left, replaced by what had been said. He uttered a small growl instead. Saruth withdrew his finger and ate, watching Makwa with a knowing smile as though he kept secrets. Makwa blinked and went back to eating, too. A few bites later he asked,
"What else?"
Saruth shrugged,
"Just a question, but I'm not sure you want to hear it."
Makwa narrowed his eyes. If he didn't ask now, it would bug him all night long.
"Ask it!"
Saruth smiled.
"Now that you know what you are, what are you going to do?"
Nothing about that question was fair.
I'm going to finish this meal and go to bed.
That's a good start, Saruth smiled.
Makwa made a non-committal sound somewhere between a growl and a grunt, finished his meal, and headed to the nearby bed, falling into it. For the first time in months, Makwa got to sleep on a real Futh Blossom bed. As he closed his eyes, he did something that he hadn't done since his mother died. He prayed. He thanked God for taking care of him and watching over him, for his escape and his new situation. Afterward, however, he thought about the countryside and what Saruth had said. It made his tail twitch until he nodded off.
Morning came, and Saruth woke Makwa up by waving a piece of smoked meat under his nose.
Makwa's eyes opened, and he looked at the food and then up at Saruth and then at the food again. He hadn't awoken to a morning meal in a long time, and he took it from Saruth while offering a look of silent gratitude. Saruth's expression seemed to say he was welcome, even though he didn't say anything. Makwa rubbed his eyes and sat up. The fur on his head did funny things from sleeping wrong on one ear. That ear was asleep, and Makwa reached up to right it, only to have it droop again. His tail lashed as he tried it once more with the same annoying result. Saruth laughed.
Did your ear die?
Makwa snorted at him and took a big, savage bite out of his breakfast. He was sent with Jeth to go wake and harness Sebastian,
and he talked to Jethk about fishing and about the big ships in the port and all the sailors and pirate hunters.
Makwa, when I grow up, I want to be a sailor and hunt down pirates.
Makwa grinned and shook his head.
But Jethk, you'd get wet all the time if you were a sailor.
Jethk snorted, just like Makwa sometimes did.
I don't care about that. I'd be willing to get wet all the time to do what I always wanted to do.
Makwa thought about it for a moment and remembered his conversation with Saruth about the things people wanted to do.
Well, in that case, I think you should do it when you grow up. I think you'd be good at it.
Jethk smiled as they finished putting on the Cathberry harness and pulling the straps tight between its parts. Saruth and the innkeeper walked in, and Saruth placed a few coins in the man's hands and then added a few more, causing him to smile. He also handed him a package and glanced over at Makwa.
Makwa, I'm having the bowl, the spoon, the hat, and the jacket sent back to the sailors of the Lake Sophie. We'll get you some more clothing and other goods soon.
Makwa wanted the jacket and the hat, but he knew that Saruth was doing the right thing.
Okay.
He didn't see that he had much choice in the matter anyway. Besides, he had little doubt that Saruth would make good on his word. The man had thus far, and something about his eyes seemed to banish doubt like bright sunlight did sea fog. Jethk glanced at Makwa askance. He shrugged. Saruth put a hand on his shoulder and interrupted.
The captain is a friend of mine. His cook made the most delicious stews. If you are ever in the port of Baruma City and the Lake Sophie is moored there, be sure to stop by and tell them I sent you.
Jethk grinned and gave a nod. Saruth thanked the innkeeper once more and stepped up into the cart. Makwa jumped in beside him and sat as his tail flicked about with energy and enthusiasm for getting the journey underway again. He waved goodbye to Jethk as they departed.
Jethk called out after them, "Come see my ship one day."
Makwa nodded.
When they were out of sight of town, Saruth turned to him.
"I have some wisdom for you. One thing you should always do if you can is pay people well. If you have enough money to pay a little extra to people who serve you, you should offer it to them for their services."
Makwa blinked. "Why? Why not pay just enough and save your money?"
Saruth lifted a brow.
"Makwa, if you were an innkeeper and you had strangers stopping at your home each night, would you be happy to see them all?"
Makwa thought for a moment and shook his head.
"No, some of them would probably smell funny."
Saruth nodded.
"Would you remember them if they'd paid you extra and were polite to you? Would you be happy to see them again?"
Makwa nodded. "Yeah, of course. I'd probably work a little harder for them than other people."
Saruth smiled.
"Exactly."
Makwa sat in silence for a while and thought about this. He watched Sebastian's tail sway back and forth as the Cathberry lumbered along before them, the cart following with ease because of the animal's great strength. His ears perked as a thought struck him.
"I learned a lot about Sebastian from Jethk. Did you know that a Cathberry can go for a week without water and be just fine, and without food for even longer?"
Saruth grinned and reached over, ruffling Makwa's ears and inciting a grumble.
"You've named him, have you?"
Makwa batted at Saruth's hands and worked for a moment on smoothing out the fur on his head. He glanced over at Saruth.
"Mm-hmm. Like it?"
Saruth nodded.
"Sebastian is a lovely name."
Sebastian lowed, glancing over his shoulder. Saruth laughed.
"It seems Sebastian agrees."